Hello, my name is Jim Henderson, and I'm one of the hosts of St. Kermit, a podcast inspired by the patron saint of green. Over the past 2 months, we've had the opportunity to speak with candidates in Massachusetts and around New England about their campaigns and their goals. Today, we're going to discuss the various statewide campaigns that are happening here in Massachusetts, as well as what we can expect to occur after Election Day. With me are Ryan Adams, a student at UMass Dartmouth, and the blogger behind Ryan's Take, Michael Ball, a journalist and business editor turned tech writer and the brains behind the Mary in Massachusetts blog, and also Luke Schuster, a member of the Cambridge School Committee and the co-chair of the Massachusetts Green Rainbow Party. Gentlemen, first question for you all. Which of these has been the biggest contributor to where the campaign stands right now? Deval Patrick's charisma, a United Democratic Party, Kerry Healy going negative, or Mitt Romney's failure to develop a positive image of Massachusetts?
I would say that it's definitely Deval Patrick's strength and to a great extent, Kerry Healy's negativity that just absolutely backfired. But even without that, Deval Patrick's charisma and hopeful message really appealed to a very large segment of the state, and I think that he would have won regardless.
You know, I think Kerry Healy never got running either. She assumed early on that everybody knew who she was, everybody knew what she could do. She avoided all of the early debates before the Democratic primary, and by the time she got on stream, Deval was way ahead.
Yeah, it's been a real fascinating year for the gubernatorial race. You have, like Ryan said, a really charismatic candidate in Deval Patrick, Kerry Healy, who from the beginning has looked completely desperate with her attacks, and the recent polls seem to show that that's really backfired. I'm curious for your guys' take on Christy Myhouse. It seemed also from the beginning that he's been a wealthy candidate with this personal vendetta about being fired, and he's been able to sort of finance his own race. When he keeps bringing up the fact that he was fired, I'm thinking, Christy, you're shooting yourself in the foot here. And I think Grace has added a lot another outside third party candidate who has really taken people by surprise with her level of confidence and knowledge of the issues.
I certainly think that Deval Patrick was fortunate enough to get into a race where the Attorney General shot himself in the foot so many times that even though he was the establishment candidate, the establishment of the Democratic Party really couldn't get behind him. And he was also fortunate that someone like Chris Gabrielli wasn't involved in the campaign at the same time Deval Patrick was. Deval Patrick, very charismatic candidate, and has done very well with that. And I think he's brought forth a lot of hope, as you said, to a lot of folks within the state and the Democratic Party. Which begs my next question, though. Does the broad support for Deval Patrick represent a real shift toward progressive views in the Commonwealth? Or is it just simply representing victory-starved Democrats?
I would definitely say that progressive politics in Massachusetts is definitely on the rebound. You saw it when Tom Finneran left. No one ever thought that he would have been driven out, and yet he was. And I think that you see it in just fatigue of 16 years of the same old Republican administrations in the corner office. And people are tired. They want something different. They don't want the cynical government anymore.
I might just plug the Green Rainbow Party here briefly. I think it's interesting. 4 years ago, we had Robert Reich, who in many ways was that year's Deval Patrick, an outsider, a former member of the Clinton administration, would have been the first Jewish governor of the state. And I think you've seen an influence that Jill had when she ran for governor 4 years ago. Grace has had this time around, particularly by being involved in four of the major debates, pressing progressive issues, and perhaps in some small way, that has influenced the debate over the last 4 years. And we've seen it in other of the smaller state races with other campaigns. You know, Jill, when she ran for state rep 2 years ago, got 20% of the vote in a three-way race. Paul Lashley, in that same 2002 campaign, got in the 30s. Mike Alio was getting in the 30s. I wonder if there's a general movement towards more progressive politics that that the Green Rainbow Party has played a role in?
I have some serious doubts that we're shifting at all. We look at the 49% unenrolled voters, which is a bit outrageous. We look at the number of Democrats name only dinos. Certainly Tom Riley was one of those.
Yep.
He had many conservative traits, and Massachusetts supposedly is so liberal, yet it has a lot of strong social conservatism, a lot of strong financial conservatism, more traditional New England.
Yep.
So I'm not sure that we could count on that. And you look at the fleet of Republican governors, steaming out.
I would say that we are seeing the movement, because if you look at the 49% of people who are unenrolled, I would gather that a lot of them are actually liberals that were turned off by the dinos and Democrats in name only, and turned off by the Democratic politicians that they did not like. And I think that you've seen a lot of the establishment kind of driven out. You saw Tom Riley crushed in the primary. You saw Birmingham last primary defeated when he tried to run for governor. So I think that we've seen a real shift.
But I think one of the challenges here, and it may not quite translate into the gubernatorial race, but if you look around the state, I mean, Massachusetts, in most places, you need to run as a Democrat in order to win your race. That there aren't enough Republicans out there to be presenting themselves as real challenges. That doesn't mean that the people who are running as Democrats are representing a real progressive or even sort of left-leaning perspective. I mean, I keep looking at someone like Emil Gogan, who was a Democrat, but he was one of the foremost opponents of gay marriage in this state, yet he was embraced by the Democratic Party. Going to a couple thoughts you had there, Luke, let me ask my next question. Other than forcing the mainstream media to acknowledge the existence of Grace Ross and Kristi Meiholz by being included in the debates, what long-term good, if any, do you gentlemen think will come from their participation in the campaign?
Well, a couple initial thoughts. I mean, one is we're seeing the Republican Party in the state really dissolving. I mean, the Green Rainbow Party is running more candidates for state constitutional office than the Republican Party. And, you know, whether or not the Green Rainbow Party currently is getting folks elected at the state level, we're certainly influencing the debate. I think, I remember it might have been the second or third debate for the gubernatorial debate, one of Grace Ross's answers to a question about government waste focused on the prison industry and the huge waste that goes into the prison industry. And we're hearing Deval talk more about the need for Corey reform. And so just as one example, I think it's hard to say, to quantify the impact Grace has had in a particular issue and, you know, whether that's really turned Deval or not. But I do think we're hearing more about, just as one example, prison reform. Mm-hmm. And Jill, I have experienced this because I've been working with Jill Stein, who's running for Secretary of State. When she ran for state rep in 2004 in Lexington, Arlington, her challenger, Tom Stanley, changed his position on gay marriage almost instantly when Jill entered the race. And so you ask Mass Equality if they're glad the Green Rainbow Party's around. Well, they have one more vote in support of gay marriage because of Jill's race.
What about Kristi Meiholz, gentlemen?
I'm actually surprised Kristi Meiholz didn't catch on more than he has. I mean, there's still a couple weeks left and he could still catch on. I think that maybe people saw him as just kind of this funny, gimmicky politician that they liked but didn't necessarily want to vote for, and I think that might have been his problem.
Well, he's definitely the cutest of the bunch of them. He's, he's the cleverest one. He's the one that gets the big yucks, which is nice. But,
right.
You know, then his yucks, he has, you know, a couple tricks. He's not a one-trick pony, but he has a few. He loves his Proposition 1. He wants that money back. But, I mean, that sort of dovetails with what other people are saying. I think Grace's strongest points have come on when she's begin to blossom in these debates.
Right.
Because she came off pretty utopian at the beginning. I mean, her website says, oh, world peace, this and that. And everybody looking at it and said, well, you know, you have no way to get there. But as she came on, she did develop, and I think she forced the people, and she challenged all three of the others during the debates, and certainly at that time, they had to actually think on their feet, which was a shock to them probably.
Mm. I mean, certainly my hope in the long term, in the long, long term, is that the political establishment here in Massachusetts will welcome candidates who are not necessarily Republicans and Democrats, that we should be having debates that include third-party candidates. If you get on the ballot, as far as I'm concerned, you qualify. And here we have Channel 4, who's now saying that Kristi Mihos' running mate and Grace Ross's running mate cannot be in the lieutenant gubernatorial debate they want to have this weekend. And that's a shame, because they are shutting out some voices.
Yep.
Now, one last thing before we go on. Quickly, Ryan, you think Grace Ross should be a Democrat. Why?
Well, I have to say I was very impressed with Grace Ross during the debates, and I did decide that while I don't agree with a lot of the issues that she brings up, I think that if she were advocating in, for example, the state legislature to make the minimum wage $16 an hour, the chances would be that much greater that the minimum wage would become $10 an hour, which is something that I would support. And so I thought that that was... I think that she could become elected as a Democrat, and I think that she's widely respected in these debates and would get some institutional support if she became a Democrat, but I don't think that she would as a Green.
Can I?
Please.
I mean, I think it's great. I read a posting on Blue Mass Group also that, you know, made a similar argument, the pitching for Grace to join the Democratic Party, and I think it really is, it's great that we have progressives, you know, across the board talking to each other about collaborating like that. Mm. My feeling and the reason why I've been drawn to the Green Rainbow Party is you know, Massachusetts is the model for here you go, Democrats. Have 85% of the legislature or whatever it is. You have sort of carte blanche. What are you going to do with it? You know, Massachusetts should be leading the nation in terms of meaningful clean elections, for meaningful Cori reform, for meaningful prison reform, and we're not doing it. You know, so my feeling, many of the folks who I know through the Green Rainbow Party come from social justice movements, from environmental movements, from, you know, poverty organizing, and it's organizers saying, you know what, we can't just be out protesting on the street, we need to do something through government at the same time. And that's a very different orientation than I think the mainstream parties are coming from.
I think one of the challenges the Green Rainbow Party faces, Luke, is, again, that shift from a protester mentality into a political mentality. There are a lot of folks in the Green Rainbow Party for whom I have lots of respect, but who grew up as protesters, right, and have brought that to a political process that doesn't reward protesting. It rewards collaboration, it rewards compromise, however difficult that may be. And I think for the Green Rainbow Party to make that next step, it's got to move away from that protester viewpoint, maybe not that energy from protesting, but it's got to be putting it into a more political-minded process.
Well, that's what's been great about Grace, is I've seen her, you know, make that transformation during this campaign. Very concrete ideas for what we can do at the state level, and I think a challenge for the party is going to be moving forward. Can we get more folks elected to municipal office, so that we have people with campaign skills, with organizing skills, so that we can build upon that, get to the state level?
One thing that I would like to just add very quickly is I think that one of the problems with the Green Party catching on is a lot of progressives aren't big fans of them because of some incidents that have happened in, for example, Pennsylvania, where the Republicans basically funded the Green Party to get them on the ballot in the Senate race there. And there have been some other incidences like that. And I think that it's important if the Green Party wants to become a bigger force in Massachusetts, which I'm all for open democracy, that they need to distance themselves from that and try to solve those problems.
Again, I think the Green Rainbow Party needs to focus on things in Massachusetts and not worry about what's happening in Pennsylvania or any other place. Let me go on to what happens after November 7th. Let's presume, looking at the polls, that Deval Patrick is our next governor.
Yes.
Do you think he can deliver on the broad range of big changes he calls for and that he promises? And can he devote motivate the leadership of the general court to follow in his path?
Yeah, I think he can, which is a big surprise and a pleasant surprise. Will be a shock to the system up on Beacon Street when he gets in, because the last Republican sets, the last four governors, have not really worked with the legislature. And they kept saying, oh, well, we have to be able to be in an adversarial position so we can hold these terrible spendthrifts in check. But, you know, calling this Taxachusetts is sort of silly. We're not in the higher range of tax states. But on the other hand, the legislature knows that each one of them is reelected by what he or she brings home. And they have all these pet projects and a tremendous amount of waste, which I guess Deval was the only one who was specifically targeting those in the last debate. But, I mean, that's a big issue of getting the people to shift to building the economy for the state. And I think his number one accomplishment is going to be producing an active legislature, getting the Senate president off the dime, getting some compromise.
I think one of the important functions that he'll be able to serve is to make sure the health bill works out, and because the funding proposition for that is very scary, and a lot of people would be afraid that they're going to water it down because we might not have the money to do that. But I feel as though with Deval Patrick there that he can protect that bill and some other key bills like that.
But no, he's not going to do everything.
No.
I mean, one of the key issues I think that a lot of progressives glommed onto a couple of years ago and were really disappointed that the legislature, the Democratic legislature, killed was clean elections. Do you think that Deval Patrick can cajole the folks in the legislature to bring back clean elections to enhance our democracy in the state?
Well, just looking at that proposition there, Tom Finneran was one of the main forces in defeating that, and so he is gone. And I think that if people call on Deval Patrick to do that, I think he would respect the voters.
I don't think it's going to happen until he begins building, getting trust. When he begins getting other stuff passed, and the people see that, you know, they start getting credit for statewide things, then all of a sudden I think that he's going to be able to enforce that kind of thing.
Now, again, one of the major problems with the clean elections is that the people who have to vote for are the ones who are going to be the ones hurt by it, namely the people who are already in office. Do you think the communities, like the blogging community, who have been very supportive of Deval Patrick's candidacy and tend to be very progressive, do you think your voices can be heard by Deval Patrick in the State House to have him take on, whether it's clean elections or other important progressive issues?
Well, he definitely does pay attention. I actually went to a rally, and I was shocked that one of his secretaries recognized me. And so, I mean, he does pay attention, and I think that we can make that an issue, and we can drive towards clean elections. I don't know what you think.
I think he may be sorry he opened the door as wide as he did to the bloggers, because, yeah. I mean, I was all over him at a transportation hearing, and he knows us. He knows a number of the more aggressive ones who are his supporters. I don't think any of us are going to let him rest.
No.
Now, Luke, let me ask you this question. Again, presuming for the argument that Deval is our governor, how might he disappoint you?
Well, clean elections is an example of that disappointment, where the Senate, which is supposed to be the more liberal body, overturned that law unanimously by a voice vote. So, you know, I'll be interested to see what influence the outside forces do have. And it's interesting, you know, we saw with Howard Dean a similar sort of grassroots internet-based electoral campaign. He wasn't able to win. Deval's going to win this race. So what will that influence be post-campaign? Open question. A friend of mine was reading a biography of Abraham Lincoln and was commenting on how after he was first elected, he appointed to his cabinet members of the opposition party because he said, you know, it's the quality of their ideas that matters. And Deval said that several times, you know, I don't care if it's a Republican idea or a Democratic idea. If it's a good idea, that's what I'm going to take with me to Beacon Hill. So I wonder, Deval, take Grace. We hear a lot of progressives talking about what a great job Grace has done. Bring her to Beacon Hill.
I mean, I think that from my perspective, I think that would be a very important step. I mean, if Deval wants to bring in a Republican or two, good for him. I think that attitude would be, from my perspective, very welcome in the sense that we're going to try to govern the entire state, not just the sliver of folks who agree with me on a particular set of issues. I think it would behoove Deval Patrick to reach out to someone like Grace or others, whether than the Green Party or just people who are outside of the Democratic Party establishment, to bring some fresh ideas and perhaps to naysay some of the things he puts forth, just to make sure that the types of debates that we watch in this short amount of time leading up to Election Day don't end on November 7th, that those continue within the State House to hopefully bring forth better ideas. Let me quickly step on one topic that you mentioned earlier, the Secretary of State's race. Now, there was a lot of discussion prior to the Democratic primary about the race between Bill Galvin and John Bonifaz, where a lot of the progressive thinkers were very supportive of John Bonifaz. John Bonifaz didn't win the primary. Will these folks now vote for Bill Galvin, even though Jill Stein is on the ballot, and Jill Stein is presenting many of the same ideas that John Bonifaz brought forth in his campaign?
That's an intriguing set, because I'm also noticing some of the other races where the people said, there's a working families candidate who says, I only want to get 3% so my party can be on the ballot. You vote so I can get my minimum, and then we'll change things going forward. And the Jill Stein, it could be a vote. I view that the same way I do the second Suffolk Senate. There's Wilkerson and Diaz. Wilkerson's incredibly powerful, influential jerk. I mean, she doesn't know how to manage her own life, and she could very well be gone with criminal indictments. I don't know. But you know, do you go to an untested woman who has good politics? Apparently she does, particularly for a Republican. Do you vote for her knowing Wilkerson's going to win and register that? Or for Stein's case, do you register your vote and send a message up and down from Duvall?
Well, it gets to a question that you've debated, Jim, on this program before about party labels and at how far do you go in strictly supporting your party when your ideals much more closely match those of a candidate outside your party?
Well, I for one think that Galvin has been a disappointment, and I did not support him when I voted. I particularly did like Bonifaz, and I hope that he will run again for a different office in the future.
Yeah, I think he'd be a very good state rep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, he's extremely bright.
One of the strengths that John Bonifaz brought to his campaign, and that Jill Stein does as well, is election issues, election reform type issues. And there is a ballot question two, that brings forth the proposition of fusion or cross-endorsement voting. What do you think about that, gentlemen?
I think it's overdue. We used to do that, and it's time to bring it back. That objection that, oh, well, this will confuse the poor voters, give me a break. I think it's an important thing, and I think it will give us a chance to have other progressive voices and regressive voices heard.
I think that we should test it out, and if it doesn't work and it does confuse the voters, then we can repeal it. And so originally I was against it, but I do think that it could serve a very good purpose now.
I think I have gone back and forth on it, and I will probably vote in favor of ballot question two, but with this caveat that it cannot be seen as the sole panacea for this issue of getting more people involved in the electoral process, because we have two such big and such monolithic parties that what's the likelihood that a Working Families or a Green Rainbow Party will be able to have any sort of sway in that process? It's still a good step forward. I think it's also important that we work toward and encourage the Democratic legislature to pass a reform such as instant runoff voting, so that in dealing, when you really do have a third party candidate who is stepping forth and has good ideas, that we're not worried about spoiling a campaign or you don't have people talking about stealing votes. No one owns a vote. And I think we should make sure that each candidate has a chance to speak their piece.
The state committee of the Green Rainbow Party had a spirited debate over whether or not to endorse question two. And we ultimately chose not to endorse it because our feeling was that, in part, it felt like a false electoral reform where, if Hillary Clinton's running as a Democrat and a Working Families Party, well, you're still voting for Hillary Clinton. And the other important piece was that we really wanted to focus our energy on instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting, where a voter ranks their preferences, and if the candidate you vote for first is deemed to not have a chance, you're able to have that second preference expressed. And we have that in places across state, including Cambridge, which frankly is a large part of how I was able to become elected to the Cambridge School Committee. Later rounds of counting where votes are reallocated. So. That plus clean elections, other more meaningful electoral reforms are where our energies really need to go.
Got it. Got two more minutes, gentlemen. I know it's an important topic for you, Mike. I'm going to bring it up. November 9th. We have a constitutional convention on the issue of whether or not the topic of gay marriage should be brought before the voters in 2008.
We don't know what the Gogan's going out, whether they're going to make some last stand like an Oral Faubus and try to come on strong, or whether the other people in the general court are going to say, oh, good, now I don't have to pay attention to those people anymore. I can actually vote my conscience. And how much of it is going to be, if there's a strong marriage equality person like Deval Patrick coming on, how much of an influence is going to be just knowing that he's coming in? And it's still up in the air, but I am feeling more sanguine about the possibility of them not getting their 25%.
I certainly hope that they don't get their 25%.
My feeling is, beyond the politics of saying we don't want the 25%, my feeling is, listen, we're talking about basic human rights, and everyone can talk about whether or not things should be brought to the voters or not, but basic human rights, as far as I'm concerned, are not negotiable.
We need ballot initiative reform. We've let this get out of control. This is not the way John Adams originally wanted it to be, and we need to reform that part of the system, too.
Got another about minute or so. Any final thoughts, Ryan?
In terms of the gay marriage issue, I think that there are two competing thoughts in American democracy. Actually, Alexis de Tocqueville talked about liberty and equality, and you need to have liberty, which means you can't have a vote on your rights because they're your rights.
Very basic. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have here. I'd like to thank Ryan, Michael, and Luke for joining me today, as well as WCCA for the opportunity to share our opinions and our ideas with you. For links to Ryan's and Michael's blogs or to the Green Rainbow Party, please go to WCCATV.org and look for the links there. To find out more about St. Kermit and our podcast, check out our website, stkermit.com, or our special interviews site, stkermit.com/interviews. If you have comments or questions about this podcast, please email us at kermit@stkermit.com. Thanks for watching.